What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight. Man, I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented R&B and jazz multi-instrumentalist. He is a musical genius and an innovator when it comes to composing, producing, and performing. And he's known for his funky groove compositions. Please put your hands together and welcome producer, musician, and performer, Brian Culbertson.
Hey,
Brian, how's it going, man?
All right, man. Glad to be here.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on the show and chopping it up with me, Brian. You know, I'm a big fan of your work, man, and I'm a keyboardist also, man. So,
oh, cool.
So from one keyboardist to another, man, I got to take my hat off to you, dude.
Oh, man. Well, thanks.
You know, man, one of the tracks that stick in my head, man, it's not too old, but it's, I think it was back in 08.
Yeah.
Bring It Back the Funk, man.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, that's a heavy, heavy track, man.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, you know, yeah, I've done a lot of different things, and I think for this new record, the 12 record, I just wanted to kind of keep changing, keep morphing, and that's why I came with this more R&B influenced record. And so, you know, like I said, I've done a lot of kind of different things, and I'm always moving forward, so to speak. So here we are.
Oh, man, it's beautiful, man. You know, the album 12 is hot, Brian.
Oh, thanks.
Got a lot of great feature artists on there, man, from Avant, Kitty Lattimore, Brian McKnight, Faith Evans, Earl Klug, and Mr. Ray Parker Jr., who I'm a huge fan of.
Oh, cool.
As a guitar player, man. He's probably one of the best rhythm guitar players I've heard, man, in a while. So,
oh, hands down. He's
yeah.
Like the man.
He is, man. And, you know, the tracks that you guys did together on the CD is hot. Couple of tracks that stick in my mind that are my favorite so far. Skies Wide Open featuring Avant. Stay With It.
Oh, yeah.
And On the Floor with Brian McKnight. Totally.
Oh, cool.
Steppers track. Man, I don't know if you're into stepping, but that's a big Steppers track there.
Oh, yeah. That was the point.
Man, you know, I know there's a little story behind the title of your CD 12, man. Give me a little history of, you know, how you came up with the album title.
Oh, yeah. Well, originally, every time I start a new project, I'll always kind of save a folder, you know, with all the, you know, like logic sequences and notes or lyrics or anything. I'll have a big folder on my computer and I'll label it like I started BC1 and then BC2 and then I got up to this one, so it's BC12, but I use the Roman numeral, XII.
Mm-hmm.
So after I started talking about when I was making this record, this is the first time that I kind of did this video blog about the making of, and I started posting things on Twitter and Facebook. So right at the beginning, I posted you know, about the hashtag, what is that, like a topic,
yeah,
in Twitter. So I did hashtag BCXII, you know, just talking about this, so you could click on that and see all the tweets that were pertaining to this record. I know, it's getting a little confusing here. But anyway, about a month into it, this guy tweeted me back. He said, "Hey, is that the name of the record?" And he just thought that was the name of it. And I was like, no, that's just what I'm kind of calling the working title. But then I started thinking about it. I was like, well, hold on a second. You know, this is number 12. And I started putting all these 12s together that were in my life, you know, like, I've been in L.A. for 12 years. I've actually been married 12 years. I was born on January 12th. There's like 12 notes on a keyboard. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
There's a bunch of other 12s, and it was like, I'm thinking the number 12 is like a good sign right now. Let me just go with that. And everyone seemed to like that, you know, the image and the title and the whole story. So that's how it came about.
No, the image was on fire, and the concept behind it was even better, because it makes sense, you know, especially when it's personal to you. You know, I could definitely, you know, vouch for that one.
Exactly. I was actually 12 years old when I first discovered, like, when the Macintosh computer was coming out. That was hot. That was sort of new back in the day, and all the drum machines and new keyboards were coming out at that point. I was 12 years old when I first discovered all that, and it blew my mind, and from that day forth, I knew I wanted to be a musician and write music and produce and stuff. So that's another 12.
No, that's hot, man. I could definitely agree with you there. I, you know, I came into music at an early age also, you know, right around 12, 13.
Yeah.
That was when I started getting into the keyboards, and, you know, I had an Emacs, too.
Oh, dude, me too.
Yeah, man. I still like the Emacs, man. You know, for that time, it was, you know, it was the stuff back then, man.
Yeah.
You know, but then you had
I got that when I went to college.
Oh, nice, nice.
I was saving up my gig money. Okay, I was eyeing that Emacs, too.
Oh, man, the Emacs was hot, man. The only thing I didn't like about it is just, you know, you just have to preload all your discs for the sounds of things, but, you know, after you got established, you can start bringing your sound sets and start creating your own floppy disk, man.
Exactly. Yeah, going back to the floppy.
Oh, yeah.
Man, that's taking you back.
Oh,
early '90s right there.
Oh, yeah, man. You know, let's see, I had the Emacs, too. I had the Korg DSS-1, Korg M1. I also played on the Juno 106, Jupiter 6.
Nice.
Yeah, just pretty much a lot of the analog stuff, man. I'm a huge analog guy, so, you know.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm crossed over to the virtual world nowadays, but, you know, I still got that old school of analog recording and taping, man. And, you know, this is before MIDI was even out.
Right. You know, I hear you.
So, you know, when did you start discovering your gift to play keyboards? Are you trained a musician, or is this something that you just picked up as a talent?
I actually started classical piano lessons when I was 8. And, you know, my parents kind of made me start that. My dad is, many people know, a high school band director and a great trumpet player as well. And so, you know, there was music in our household ever since I was born. So It was just kind of... It was kind of around me all the time, so, you know, I didn't really have a choice, but, you know, I loved it, so I thought it was great.
Right.
And so, you know, like I said, I took up piano at 8, and then started messing around with a bunch of other instruments. I took drum lessons for a while, then trombone, bass guitar in junior high, and a lot of other instruments as well, so I like messing around with all of them.
No, it definitely shows in your compositions. You know, I definitely hear the, you know, even with your keyboard skills, I mean, it's very musical. And, you know, I think a lot of times, because we're most instrumentalists, I play guitar and bass also, it's like we're able to bring those dynamics into our keyboard playing at times.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because we can hear the way a trumpet player, a trombone player, bass guitar would play, you know, so we can use those dynamics and apply that in our dexterity and our keyboard playing.
Yeah, I always felt my piano style was very similar to like a wind instrument, to where it was more fluid. I was trying to sing with it, you know. Being a horn player, I was mainly a trombone player throughout high school and college, believe it or not. And, you know, playing those lines, trying to be melodic and, you know, legato and all that kind of stuff, that kind of rubbed off on my piano playing. And I think that's a little bit of what kind of may set me apart, you know, from just being just a piano player. You know what I mean? Because a lot of piano players out there, if you listen to, they're a little more choppy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just not that that's bad. It's just different, right. You know?
Yeah.
So maybe that's where I kind of got my melodic thing from. So,
you know, with your tracks, man, that stand out to me, you're not using just traditional piano. You do as your solos. I mean, that's really your signature thing. But I hear a lot of analog bass, synth basses. And what was it about the synthesizers that really stood out to you to incorporate that in your compositions?
Well, I mean, when I first started, I didn't, you know, have access to a band. You know, it was me sitting in my parents' basement, like a lot of us, you know.
Right.
All we had were the keyboards surrounding us. So we literally had to make all the sounds up ourselves, you know, using the earlier drum machines, all the synths that you would have to program your own bass sound in.
Right.
So I just, you know, I grew up that way doing it, and I just still love doing that.
You know, we're merging into a world, man, where it's, you know, virtual synths. And, you know, there's still the hardware synths out there for a lot of the guys that like the hardware preference. You know, are you using a combination of both, or are you still strictly using hardware synths now?
I'm actually a combination. I would say at this point I'm leaning heavier on the virtual world. Only because, I mean, there's so many amazing sounds that are in there, and it's instant recall. You know, you call up a logic sequence and bam, everything's right there.
Yes.
But there's still some of those old sounds that you cannot replace. So a lot of my synth bass sounds, I'm still using a SE-1, the Studio Electronics.
Oh, wow.
Kind of like a mini Moog emulator.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's all analog, and that thing is just amazing.
Yeah, that's still the godfather of bass modules to me.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it just has everything from gritty, dirty basses to clean sub basses. I mean, you name it, it's in the SE-1.
Yeah, there's another Studio Electronics box that I use a lot, the ATC-1. I don't know if you've seen that, but that has a million, like, kind of more lead synths.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Wow.
I highly recommend.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not that expensive either. So, yeah, check that out. I was playing it for, I demoed it for, you know, Ray Parker was over. And I was like, dude, you got to check this out. And he instantly, while he was over at my studio, called Studio Electronics and ordered one.
Wow.
He's like, oh, my God, I got to have one of those.
Yeah.
So,
amazing.
Pretty bad. Pretty badass. But and then there's a couple other things, but like I said, majority at this point I'm going virtual just because you know, it's cool.
It is, man. There's so many different manufacturers out there, and you know, it's,
yeah,
it started off kind of slow where it's like, I'll stick to my hardware because I have the, you know,
of course,
the Motifs, the Tritons, and you know, all of my Roland libraries and things.
Exactly. But
now I would say within the last 2-3 years, I mean, it's just,
yep,
really just took the industry by the storm. I mean, you got Native Instruments, and you know, Spectrasonics is another great manufacturer with a synth library, man. It's,
yeah, I'm all over the Stylus, Trillian, Omnisphere, all that stuff.
Oh, it's, man, it's huge, man.
Yeah, I also like the Rob Pappen stuff.
Oh, man, the Predator. Oh, yeah,
like, Predator is ridiculous.
That is my go-to for synth bases, man. That's just it, you know.
So the bridge on Skies Wide Open, that sound that comes in, like, cheek, 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 that sound?
Yeah.
That's Predator right there.
Wow. Amazing.
So it has that really edgy, sawtooth, very modern dance kind of thing that, you know, I love that stuff.
It is, man. You know, you mentioned Logic Pro, man. I'm a huge Logic Pro user. I've been using Logic Pro for a while. You know, coming from a Pro Tools environment and also running,
sure,
Cubase for 6-7 years. Give, mm-hmm, me the pros that you like Logic, man, because I can't talk about it enough. Everybody on my show always hears me talking about Logic, but, you know, it's just nice to get that other ear and another user's,
yeah,
perspective on Logic.
Well, I use Logic only for sequencing. I do all my tracks in Logic. I'm just quick as hell.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's most important for, you know, no matter what, you know, your preferences, you got to be quick at it. And so, you know, certain people like doing Pro Tools, other people like doing Cubase or whatever. To me, I don't think it really matters. I just started on Logic a long time ago, so I know all the shortcuts. I have, you know, for me, it's about shortcuts, keyboard shortcuts, and making your own.
Yeah.
So that, you know, boom, 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 you're not impeded by the technologies, you know. I think it's about getting to your sounds quick, being able to edit it quickly, get in and out. Because the faster you can run the gear, the more creative you can be.
Definitely.
That to me is the most important thing. And I'm using Pro Tools, too, to record and mix in.
Okay.
So I have two completely separate systems. A Logic computer and then a Pro Tools computer. Then they're linked up digitally. I can transfer stuff back and forth. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. You know what I tell people now? I look at Logic's, you know, people who use Logic's, and, you know, I just feel that, man, there's 10,000 different ways you can really set up your templates, you know, because I'm hosting about 40 virtual instruments in,
yep,
Logic, and, you know, everything, like I said, it's preloaded for me.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, you don't have to dig for your sound. You just, you know, highlight the track that you want to start playing on, and it's there for you, you know.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
I also use the Vienna Ensemble, third-party AU hosts.
Oh, wow.
As well.
Yeah.
Because I'm actually not running Logic in 64-bit yet. I'm still running a 32-bit, so therefore there's a limitation on your RAM.
Yeah.
So to get around that, you can use VE Pro, what it's called, Vienna Ensemble Pro, and you can load a ton of more sounds than all those, and there's just a bridge that goes into Logic. So it's kind of complicated, but it works.
Oh, kind of like a rewire, you know, using something.
Yeah, kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, I got
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Nice. You know, but with your recording background, man, you're coming from the 90s and 80s for recording, man. I mean, what's your pros and cons between the analog formats and the DAW formats now?
Well, to be honest, I got to tell you, you know, I use 2-inch tape a lot.
Right.
And, you know, obviously it sounds fantastic, but it's really a pain. Because it was expensive as hell, number one. Number two, at the end of each song, you got to wait 45 seconds for it to rewind.
Right.
So, you know how much time was wasted rewinding?
Yes.
So, just that time alone, Pro Tools now, boom, 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 you know.
Right.
To me, again, it's all about time management, man. You know, it's about how quick can you knock this stuff out.
Oh, totally. Let alone the storage of the tapes, man. It's like having 40,000 phone books in a house, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. So, and obviously, you know, you're limited to, you know, 24 tracks there, or less than if you get Simpty on 24. You know, so I'm way, way into the digital thing, and it's so much easier to do, you know, complex mixing. With all the writing and effects, you know, things that you can do with all the automation and all that stuff. So,
sure.
You know, I can't go back.
No, I hear you, man. You know, a lot of guys, you know, we're using now is this, we get a chance to use these external mic pre's, you know, to really warm up our signal if we're going to run into like a rack mount, like an HD2192, you know, or maybe a Rosetta 800. You know, so, I mean, and now we're kind of getting the best of both worlds. You know, besides the 2-inch tape, you know, we're still getting that warm signal on our signal chain.
Yeah, I'm using a Neve mic pre and then right into, like you said, an Apogee. And then digital into Pro Tools. So, sounds fantastic.
Oh, man, you can't. That's a winning combination, man.
Exactly. Exactly. And then the way I mix, I actually come out 32 outputs of Pro Tools into... I have the, do you know about the Dangerous 2 bus?
Dangerous? No, I haven't heard of that. Man.
They're analog summing boxes. So the whole point of this is instead of coming out just stereo out of your Pro Tools, which kind of squishes all the numbers, imagine like a funnel, you know, taking all your tracks, let's say you have 90 tracks, right?
Yeah.
And pushing them all out of one and two. Well, you got to fit all those ones and twos out of one output one and two. Well, if you let them go out 1 through 32, you have a lot more signal and, you know, sound going out. Then it goes out into the analog world, and then they get mixed together there more naturally. And supposedly the sound, you know, we've AV'd a lot. The sound is bigger, wider, fatter. So, you know, something to check out.
I could definitely see it on the low end. I mean, because I think that's where a lot of the DAW systems fall off at, is that low end. I mean, it's bright, it's tangy, but that beefy bottom end, man, definitely lacks on any DAW system. I don't care what you're running.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely got to check that out, man. Thank you.
There you go.
You know, for your compositions, Brian, I got to ask you, man. I mean, you've been producing and composing for a while. Is there any particular methods that you use for yourself when producing, or even for an artist, per se, that you kind of use to a go-to formula? Not maybe exactly the same, but something or a foundation that you start off on?
Well, I think it depends on what style of music you're going for and where that artist has come from. You know, I think for myself... I'm always trying to do or not repeat what I've done before. So that's where I start from. Okay, I'm not going to use any sounds that I've used before.
Sure.
Let's go hunting. Let's go finding new, interesting sounds that are just different, yet still fit in with my overall sonic palette that people are used to hearing me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think, you know, you don't want to go completely left field, obviously, or else you're going to turn some people away.
Right.
So, I mean, that's kind of my feeling. I've always tried to push myself and not settle on the same 10 banks of sound that I always use. You know, I hear a lot of producers, you can hear them a mile away. It's like, oh, they did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like, wow, that's the same snare drum on 7 different songs they've done.
Sure, you know, I always call it a sonic signature, man.
There you go. But I think there's other ways of getting a sonic signature and still being creative and innovative, so...
No, I totally agree with you. You know, like you said, it really comes down to the project that you're working on. It may sound the same, but again, it really depends on the tempos, the vocalist that you're working in, the key that you're tracking in, the sounds that you're really surrounding those vocals around. I mean, it changes.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. That's why there's no formula.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not really a huge formula. I'm a formula guy, maybe for mixing. You know, I like to start with certain things, maybe my drums, mixing my drums first, and then really put my vocals around it and bringing things in. But for writing, you know, if I got a good groove going, you know, I'm going to start with that and just kind of build from there, or it might just be a bass line. And, you know, so yeah, it really depends. So I agree with you, man.
All right.
So I got to ask you, man, as a keyboardist and piano player, man, are there any specific runs and chord progressions that you practice daily?
You know, I got to be honest, I don't really practice and do a lot of that stuff. I really should, but it's just, you know, that takes a lot of time. And for me, I mean, I'm always playing, of course, but I'm not sitting down, okay, I need to learn this scale or try to check that out. Or,
right.
You know, again, I wish I had more time to do that, but I don't know. For me at this point, I'd rather be writing or producing or making tracks. That's more of my love, you know.
Yeah, that's for me too, man. You know, I you try to discipline yourself to practice, but next thing you know, man, I'm grooving and I'm writing
exactly
a song, you know.
Yep.
So it's like, man, bad habits on my end, but you know, it's just certain, you know, at a certain level of musicianship, you've been playing long enough and you're seasoned enough where you can kind of get away with not practicing so much, you know what I mean? And you know, the tightness and the speed might go a little bit, but you know where to hit the keys, and if not, you can stop the record and go back and do it again. So,
and for me, I've never wanted to be like a virtuoso or anything on it, you know, as a performer.
Right.
I don't know. I'd rather be do a lot of different things. I think something's going to suffer. You know, if you're practicing 8 to 10 hours a day, which is what you have to do to be the best in the world or more,
right?
You know, okay, well, you're not writing a lot of songs then.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, or you're not working on the business side of things, which is half of it these days, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Or this or that, or, you know, you're not, I don't know. Something's going to suffer. So, you know, like I said, I love either being on the road, being on tour, or, you know, being in the studio writing songs and making tracks, so.
No, I hear you, man. It's like, you know, my game plan has switched over the years, you know, obviously with the last 15, 20 years, you know, you're a hot rider, man, when you're young, you're 16, 15, you're doing complex runs, like, man, look what I can do, but it's like, you get your library, and it's like, man, I'm not writing a lot of songs, you know, but I'm great, but, you know, you just really try to focus on the composition, so, yeah.
Well, I think that's what everyone starts out like, you know, it's practice, 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 practice.
Right.
So that you can, you know, become a professional musician and then start going out into the real world.
Right.
You know, thankfully, you know, we did spend that time back in our, you know, formative years, so to speak. You know, I mean, I practiced all the time.
Right.
Or as, you know, much as you can when you're younger.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, bam, you're out, you know, I'm out of college, get thrown in. I started doing jingles right out of college. Actually doing records and jingles at the same time. So, I mean, and jingles was 15 hours a day.
Oh, yeah.
So, good luck trying to fit even an hour of practice in there. I was trying to get some sleep.
Right, exactly.
It was crazy.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you.
You know, again, I think for me, touring has helped me. You know, because every night I'm trying to do some new things.
Right.
And I think in front of an audience, I actually learn by playing in front of people. I'll push myself to do more, go wilder, or do something else. You know, and I wouldn't necessarily do that in a practice room. So there's kind of something to be said about both. I think.
It is, man. You know, that was my next question, man. You know, live versus, you know, finding that zone as a musician, I think it's crucial. Do you find having that on stage where you can gravitate, you know, off the audience's energy and off your fellow bandmates, or being more structured in studio environment where you really take time with your compositions?
I think I definitely take more chances on the road.
Okay.
I just put it out there. people who've seen me on stage know that, I mean, you never know what can happen. And, hey, I might totally mess up. But you know what? I went for it. And it had some feeling and some soul about it. So, you know, I'm okay with that.
Oh, yeah. You got to try new things, man. Get out that box.
Exactly.
You know, you got to agree, man, as a musician, even as a keyboardist, man, we can find ourselves staying in that box, that comfort zone, you know, where you're at 100% and everything's on autopilot. And you're like, I'm not going to make a mistake in this zone. But, you know, the cool stuff is outside the box.
Exactly.
You know, so, yeah, I agree with you.
I mean, you're never going to grow.
No, never.
So, you know, I think we have to grow. Always changing and striving to get better and do something different, you know?
Definitely.
So
what's on the musical agenda for 2010, Brian, man? We got the hot CD out, man. I mean, who do we have on play? Are you doing any production work or any songs?
I actually wrote a bunch of songs for the new Dave Koz record.
Nice.
That's coming out in October. I actually wrote 5 songs on there.
Wow.
And played a bunch of parts, did some co-production. Marcus Miller produced the whole record. They hired Marcus to handle all that. I was sort of making my record when he was doing that, so I couldn't really get into the full production of Dave's record, but I was able to write a bunch, which was cool.
Man.
So that's coming out soon. The first single, Put the Top Down, that's actually out. That's our tune. So that came out already. Otherwise, I'm just trying to hit the road and do as much promotion for this as possible. I have another project lined up in the fall, but I can't really say much about it at the moment.
Sure.
Something cool is going to go down top of next year, but you'll find out.
Fair enough, man. I know how it is.
Let's just say it's going to be an interesting collaboration.
Oh, wow. Well, I can't wait for that, man.
That's all I'll say.
Well, Brian, it's been a pleasure having you on my show, man. It's truly an honor, man. I love your work, man, and, you know, the stuff that you've done for the past, man, what, 20 years now?
Well, hell, my first record came out in
95.
Not quite, but we're getting there. Yikes.
But you were on the way up there, though, you know what I mean? I always say, you know, your record was released there, but you started before then, before the record was released as a musician.
And
so you're already seasoned coming in the game.
Oh, boy. Well, I appreciate you. Appreciate you having me on the show, and I look forward to hanging out someday.
Oh, definitely, man! I gotta have you back. Talk about that new project, man.
All right, you got it.
Well, you have a safe 2010, Brian. You take it easy.
All right, you too, man.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. And a big shout out and thank you to Brian Culberson for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Big fan of his work, man, and his new CD title as well is really hot. There's a lot of tracks on there for you R&B fans, man. I know you'll enjoy. For more information on Brian, you need to hit his website up at www.brianculbertson.com. Again, www.brianculbertson.com. And there's also links on there to follow my Facebook, Twitter, and MySpace and YouTube. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up at www.spud2tight.com. Again, www.spud2tight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast. So if you have an iPhone, an iPod, or a computer, open up your iTunes player, go to the iTunes store, and type in the Producers Corner, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. So to close out the show, I'm going to play one of the songs off of Brian's new CD. And the title of the track is called Skies Wide Open and features R&B artist Avant. So until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace. Baby, la la la.
Every day's a beautiful day when the waves rush in, and the view from the bay, when the birds sing their song and the wind hums along. It's all about the love you give, baby, you're so positive. Life, trust me, I ain't with it, babe.